This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's 5:07, and for our first story, we're looking at why children don't like nature as much as we think they do. That's right, a study by the University of Chicago found that children prefer urban environments, but they may become more fond of nature as they grow up.
Yeah, so as adults, we often think about running away from the hustle and bustle of city life and go to a beach or a park or somewhere green. And I guess we just assume that kids love nature too, but apparently not. And apparently it has nothing to do with their home or their play environment or even how much time they spend in nature. So yeah, it'll be interesting to understand why this is the case.
I do wish that though we had this report done every, say, 10 years.
Right.
So that we could compare and contrast over the decades and find out if there's an arc that we're moving on.
Yeah, yeah.
But certainly, I mean, kids would be... when the tests were performed, they were asking kids to look at images of different environments and then asked to choose which ones they preferred.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite possible that they were merely choosing, as young kids, were choosing the images that they recognize.
Or one that they are familiar with.
They're familiar mm-hmm. with, they feel safe inside, whereas, you know, big, I don't know, especially jungle, it'd be kind of terrifying, wouldn't it? But even so, yes, they did find that as kids grew older, though, there was a marked preference more towards nature.
I just wonder if it's a different way of appreciating the different kinds of nature that is already actually all around us, even in the city. Sometimes when we think about nature, it's these vast green areas, or it's forests, it's beaches, it's jungles that we think of. But then even in the city itself, there's actually brimming flora and fauna, right? There's the birds that sometimes we don't consider, the little sparrows that is actually part of nature that we could consider. We, of course, have a lot of bugs, lots of, unfortunately, rats in the city that are also strangely, unfortunately, also part of nature. So, you know, it doesn't take just going to extremely far away places to just be able to experience that. If anything, you can just bring your kids to a park. And I think that might actually help solve this nature deficit thing that we're seeing among kids.
I mean, I think it depends what kind of things you do when you are in this park or beach or whatever, and whether it's interesting to the kid. So, for example, if you bring them to the beach, maybe like playing with the sand or building sandcastles, but not so much in terms of swimming in the deep, scary ocean. So, if you push them towards swimming, then they will enjoy the experience. So, they will enjoy being outdoors in general. So, I think it depends on what activities you end up doing there.
But then also, if we are increasingly urbanized society,
mm-hmm.
And accessing, especially in Malaysia, actually, accessing nature is not that easy, I think, anyway. Is there a benefit or a loss, for that matter? If you do not partake, is there a loss? I mean, we mentioned, I don't know if we mentioned, but certainly health. I mean, it seems to be a regular thing to talk about childhood obesity on this show now, and, you know, diabetes, etc. When you enter nature, you should be exercising. But where are the spaces inside Kuala Lumpur, in the Klang Valley?
I would imagine spaces like the park in KLCC, Taman Riba Kiara, or
Frim.
Or if you just happen to live in a neighborhood where there are parks readily available, I think that is some of the spaces we can access.
And adults, adults usually are the ones who exercise in these recreational parks. But from my observation, when I do go to these places in the evenings, the kids not necessarily exercise per se, but they usually play around or, I don't know, like in the Tamantun Park, they go to the river and, I don't know, sort of like swim there, which I don't know if it's allowed.
I'm a bit older than you too. I grew up in an age where kids were out on the streets on bicycles and any hour at all. What about you two? Did you grow up with that kind of freedom?
Yeah, some amounts of it, but I could never stray too far from home, unfortunately.
A lot of my childhood was spent in front of the television, so it's not so much about being outdoors for me.
And now, though? Now?
Now, when I have the chance, I do go outdoors because it's really boring at home. And I guess that's one of the reasons why adults prefer the outdoors or natural environments more than the urban environments, just because, you know, they're sick of the mundaneness of everyday life, going to work and being at home. So it's a nice escape going to a forest or a beach or a park.
Let us know how often you spend time outdoors. We also have a poll running on Twitter that's asking the question of how often do your kids spend time outdoors. So far, it's 50% once a week, 38% more than once a week, never 13%. So you can also call us 7733 2900 with your thoughts, and WhatsApp is 0187898899. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Best flipping moments. BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's 5:14. You're listening to the Evening Edition with me, Kelvin. We also have Ayman and Cam with us. So we have been talking this hour about this study that came out that said that, well, children actually don't innately like spending time in nature as much as we think they do. So we wanted to just dig a little bit deeper into this. And we now have on the line Firdaus Nisha Muhammad Faisal, Director of Ecocentric Transitions. Nisha, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hiya.
So in this study by the University of Chicago that we're discussing today, results show that children prefer urban environments at a young age, though this might change as they grow older. What are your thoughts on this? Have you seen evidence of this yourself?
I think it is really about, it's not about the lack of exposure to the environment. I think it's also the overexposure to, you know, being indoors, the overexposure to having instant gratification when you play a video game. You know, colorful things, because nature is very subtle and nature is very experiential. You've got to be there to feel the wind. You've got to be there to feel whether the water is hot or cold. So it is a conditioning thing, whether you have access to it or not as well.
With that in mind, then, have you seen a difference, though, with between children and adults in their experiences? And is there a fear of nature and the dirtiness of it?
I think when you're really young, nothing is dirty. Nothing is, you know, absurdly dangerous. Everything is a curiosity. But parents, through guiding their children, in caring for their children, they tend to mollycoddle them somewhat. So it's like, oh, don't go there. It's going to be dirty. Don't do this. So I guess, like for me, in my childhood, I grew up in the 80s. I was really lucky to grow up in Section 5 in PJ. So Gassing Hill is my backyard. And for us to hike every weekend, we go for walks with the neighbors. It's like, you know, even when my parents are not home, I just follow the neighbor out, walk down the longkang, you know, collect moss and make a little diorama. So that was my childhood. So I don't think I had a fear except for the dogs that will rush to the fence line and bark at you. Besides that, everything was rather safe in my mind.
Oh, your childhood is nice.
Yes, for sure.
How do you develop this sort of affinity to nature among young children? Is it something that they need to turn to their parents or guardians to learn about? Or is it something that we just learn ourselves as we grow older?
I think, you know, a lot of kids, especially the urban kids, right, which is the focus of this conversation, is that they probably have little pets like gerbils and fish and, you know, their dogs and their cats. You know, you cannot discount those beings as nature. So the fact that your cat is hungry or your cat wants affection or your cat wants or needs a bath once in a while, you know, so all these things are also part of the learning of nature. It's just that it's happening in your own house. So it doesn't feel like it's outdoors. So I guess kids bank data over time and the data changes, you know. So you have to not just look at it as an exercise where scientists went out and took photographs and asked kids to rank them. Because you're asking children who are under the care of their parents to make decisions which they are not used to making, you know. But if you ask a kid, would you like to go swimming or would you like to, you know, sit at the side and play with a ball? It depends. If the kid loves running after a ball, he's going to go play for the ball. But if the kid wants to go and, you know, likes the water and enjoys splashing about because it's a hot day, then the kid might go swimming. So the sensory, the way the question was asked was not a sensory type question. It was a very visual type question. So if you're talking about the multiple intelligences, you also realize that kids at a very young age have got a lot more raw data capture. So that's how you get kids who are on the spectrum of autism that get overwhelmed by too much sound, too much light, too much texture, you know? So that's my take of that.
Right. And I guess just, you know, thinking about this, what kind of relationship are we or should we be aiming to foster between children and the environment?
I think, you know, living in the city, we hardly see trees that kind of that grow higher than the house, the roof line, you know? Mm. So I'm quite privileged. I live in Taman Tun, so I have a park right up my street. I'm on Jalan Datuk Sulaiman, you know? So for me, a lot of people say, hey, you know what? It's nice. I heard you guys talk about the swimming in that little stream. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the kids feel that's fun, you know? And I think what we aim to do is to get as many kids as we can out into natural spaces. Whether their parents are exercising and they just tag along, the fact that they're outdoors, the fact that they are just seeing other people, they're interacting, I think that's a really, really good start, just because now we're just living all on top of each other in such small spaces in the city.
Well, perhaps just explore the word nature for a moment there. You've mentioned Bukit Gasing, you grew up next to, and mm-hmm. now Taman Tun. Mm-hmm. These are urban green spaces, far removed from well, I mean, nature, really. Are they nature, and are they these urban green spaces enough to inculcate the kind of feelings you're hoping?
So the thing is, when you say urban green spaces, I hear a park that is manicured, you know? Mm-hmm. And if you really spend time in spaces like Gatting Hill and in Taman River Kera, you will see that you can actually see glowworms. You can go birding. You know, you hear a whole bunch of different sounds that you wouldn't hear if you were in a normal park in the middle of the city. You kind of get a glimpse of it in Taman Tugu, but it's not as gorgeous as in, you know, Gasing or in Bukit Kiara. So these spaces still exist, but there is a definition, a difference between what's natural and what's curated. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And for some families and their kids, maybe the opportunity to be close to nature might not be as available to them than others. So, for example, if they, because of time commitments or distance, etc. So, how can technology and learning materials give kids this access to nature?
Oh, in a way, I feel there is no substitute for nature.
Mm-hmm.
I feel if once a year, boleh mandi sungai, you can go and, you know, jump into a river and you can learn how to climb a rock slowly. You know, you may graze your knee, but next time you go see a rock, you know how to tackle it, you know? Those kind of experiences that it gets embedded in your memory, even if it's once a year, it's better than nothing at all. Because you can't substitute by playing a video game. You can't substitute by reading about it. You could watch National Geographic and feel at awe of the grandeur of nature. But that experience of catching that one fish that would never come out from behind the rock is so much more exciting for a child in their memory than, you know, actually getting the frog that was sitting in the bathroom. You get what I mean?
Yeah.
It's so different. It's so different.
So, you know, you have a card game that you use to teach children about animals in Malaysia. Could you tell us a bit more about that?
Right. So Rimba the Card Game was developed because as we traveled across the country to teach about environmental education, and I asked kids, name me three Malaysian animals. I'll get a lion, which we don't have, a giraffe, which will probably knock its neck on everything as it walks into the Malaysian rainforest, and a zebra, which is a black and white animal that does not exist here. So I'll ask them, name me one black and white animal that you know that's Malaysian, and they'll go, panda, zebra. I'm like, no, tapir. So, you know, it's from this frustration of talking to kids about what kind of animals they recognize from our area, our context, our region. I realized that there really wasn't a baseline of knowledge. And most kids could tell me only tiger and orangutan and maybe, just maybe, hornbill. So that was kind of what inspired the whole idea of gamifying the learning of biodiversity.
Ah. I have one final question for you,
mm-hmm.
which is, in your experience, from what you're looking around, do you think that the childhood you had in the 80s and the childhood, say, I had in the 70s, can that be had now where a kid could grow up experiencing the kind of spaces and openness that we had the good fortune to have?
I mean, there's a big movement now for forest schools and outdoor spaces learning with like people like MNS who bring you to FRIM, and then they have the education camp that's Kuala Selangor. So MNS actually has many education centers around the country. It is a great way for schools to participate because they do get large discounts when they do a school program. So I guess if you're a parent and you can't really, commit to bringing your kids out as much, maybe encouraging your school to have teachers run the clubs, bring the clubs to these kind of sites would be an entry point. Because I agree, the population has increased somewhat. The green spaces have shrunk. It does require quite a lot of time and, you know, brain space to plan all these things. I don't think we're entirely lost, you know. There's still so many places that we can visit within the KL, an hour's drive. Like Gombak is still pretty green. Shah Alam's got some nice spaces. You can still drive out to Port Dickson, and, you know, it's not that bad in terms of the distance. So I think it's just a bit more effort on the parent side, but I think school and, being a part of the conversation of looking at green spaces and nature parks is something that parents can participate in. Like when I don't currently run an official green school yet, jungle school yet in KL, but from my little excursions with kids, it's pretty easy. I can find spaces in FRIM, you know, which you can drive out and bring a picnic. So it may not be open the back door and it's there, but it's there. There are spaces that people can utilize.
Nisha, thank you so much for sharing that perspective with us.
Thank you for having me.
That was Firdaus Nisha Muhammad Faisal, Director of Ecocentric Transitions, talking to us about, you know, how we can get kids to be out in nature more often, seeing that a study from the University of Chicago found that kids actually prefer urban environments. So, you know, when she was talking about her experiences and how she grew up, it also did remind me that I was quite lucky to have those spaces. I remember just scooping up tadpoles from longkangs and trying to eat some flowers, if I'm not wrong.
I know, I'm sure it has done your, you know, new antibodies and immune system a world of good. No, seriously, I'm sure it has.
Yeah, probably, because you're exposed to all the dirt and bacteria. I mean, I myself am quietly jealous about your childhood, but I do remember fondly my parents.
Wait,
taking
mine or camps?
Both. But I do remember fondly my parents taking me, if not necessarily in a nature environment. Mm. They brought me to museums and touristy places, and that in itself was helped create good memories about bonding with my parents and whatnot.
Well, having said that, do you crave going to green spaces now that you're an adult, seeing that you feel like you missed out on that as a kid?
I do want to spend more time outdoors, but it's not because I'm trying to compensate for the lack of it when I was younger. Yeah. It's more because there are so many things to do outside and there are so many places to go, and life is short. I like to see all these places.
It's in KL in Malaysia, it is hot out there.
It is very hot. So you can keep your thoughts coming. You can let us know how often should kids spend in the outdoors. Do you take your kids out for excursions in nature? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Bruce Freddie Morrissey, BFM 89.9.
6:06 in the evening. This is the Evening Edition. And earlier in the hour, well, rather at 5 p.m., we were talking about children and how we can get them to appreciate nature a bit more. Because it turns out a research found that children actually prefer urban environments, just that they become more fond of nature as they grow up. And we have been, you know, asking for your stories about, you know, when you grew up, was that something you had experienced as well? There's been a mix of responses, being here saying that I was a sickly boy, the parents tend to be too protective of where I wanted to go, especially camping and so on. Cycling around the neighborhood was still okay, but fast forward now, I understand why parents nowadays are reluctant. Too protective, as we have compounded the protection from our parents to our children, that's only natural. So I guess the parenting style kind of carries on throughout generations.
I mean, it's closed down, you know, from my mother, who grew up with absolute freedom. She could wander everywhere, and she allowed me that same ability. If I don't have children, but if I would have closed it down And then, you know, their children would close it down, get more and more paranoid. But I wonder if there'll be a swing back the other way again.
Maybe if when our children grow up to become parents themselves, they
have had enough.
Yeah, have had enough of that. You know what? I'll give you something different than my childhood. Go and do whatever you want.
Yeah, I think that might actually be the case, right? Because if you've been missing out on something, and now if we are looking for more activities, more free activities to do over the weekends and sometimes in the evenings, taking your kids to the park is the easiest thing to do. And it's also one of the easiest ways to get to know your neighbors and fellow parents.
Yeah. But it doesn't deny the fact that there is a greater sense of danger around, just because we hear it all the time in the news and on the internet and whatnot. So it is natural for to be more protective, and hopefully in 20, 30 years' time, it'll be much better for the kids at that time to roam around and play and do whatever they want.
Fingers crossed. We also do have a caller on the line. Amir, good evening. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, evening, the team in VFM. I'd like to share, when I was growing up, we had a lot of unused mining pools. This was in Taiping. And although we didn't have a lot of trees in the mining areas, but we enjoy ourselves at the outdoors. So we were like fishing with, you know, with a tin susu and just throw a line in there and getting tilapias and everything. So and we could cycle around the pool. So it was the fear of the water, but yet we had the fun to go around and explore all these sites. So
can I ask you, when was this? The '70s or
The late '80s?
Or the late '80s?
Yeah.
And did any of the kids ever get hurt?
The bruises are normal when we start cycling around quick and fast and racing each other. We do get around, but we always go back and maybe get slapped around once in a while.
Right.
And come back again.
Because I mean, mining pools are, you know, they're kind of dangerous, aren't they?
Yes. But at that time, that's a challenge. You know, we didn't say where we were going, but we all go to these kind of areas anyway. As a child, I think we didn't have that fear as what we have right now. So we just enjoy ourselves.
Amir, thank you so much for sharing that story with us. And actually, I can relate to that mining pool story, because we did grow up very near one. And sometimes my grandparents would take me stone skipping and just throwing pebbles in general into that mining pool. But we never really went back after, because I had slipped in and nearly drowned.
Well, yeah, and also as an indication of the kind of post-industrial world we live in, that we started this story about talking about kids getting back to nature, yeah, and we've ended with that abandoned mining pools are kind of like nature.
And we do have more messages coming in. This one coming from Tree Lin, which says that I grew up with my grandma at Kota Tinggi, Johor, in a kampung house. We have mangosteen trees, rambutan trees, and I'm always outdoors playing with swings. And we have a nice outdoor aquarium. Used to see monkeys and squirrels. Occasionally, we see monitor lizards and snakes. Those were the good times. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, I've read somewhere that if you see monitor lizards around your environment, that's a sign that the surrounding natural habitat around you is actually quite healthy.
Oh, I did not
know. Well, why is that?
I don't know. It's just like a quick one-off thing that I remember reading.
But they require clean water and stuff like that, presumably, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Not sure. We also have this from Shaza that reads, I grew up in the 90s in KL. I enjoyed all the good stuff, playing on the streets, cycling, catching tadpoles, eating flowers, the whole lot. It's very similar experiences to mine. My parents' only rule was to be home by 7 or before Maghrib. I just realized I was allowed to do all that since I was 5. My oldest daughter is now 5, and I can't imagine her doing all that. For that, I salute my parents.
Yeah, well, I mean, you have your daughter, you have to take the courage and reverse the trend.
Yeah, just the same way Shaza is doing the complete opposite of what her parents did.
Yeah.
Maybe her child will do something opposite when they grow up.
You know, sometimes I wonder if this is a case of young parents and adults now in general becoming more and more busier and busier with the work that they do, that they can't afford to supervise their kids so that they can't see them go out. And, you know, it is also this increasing sense of perception that if you leave your kids alone, that you are being you're being quite irresponsible as a parent. And because of all this, there is that stigma of leaving your kids alone, but it's also this perception of the great outside being quite dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, has there been anything, documentaries, news, dramas that we've watched on the television the last 30 years that has told us anything other than it's dangerous out there and it's filled with bad people who want to do bad things? I mean, you'd be going counter to everything you've been taught.
It'd be a very boring crime story, though, if it just showed kids having fun outside.
But if that were the truth, go take your kids, give them a penknife and a box of matches and drop them in the jungle right now.
We took a really sharp left turn.
Maybe I'm being a bit extreme.
You can keep your stories and memories coming. 7733-2900 is the number to call. WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.